Okay, well, we confront a pretty worrying and confusing situation at the moment. There's the rise of actual fascists after the Holocaust, which was sort of universally recognised as the worst thing ever. Along with the rise of fascists and the sort of hard drag to the right of mainstream politics, there's been a shocking rise of anti-Semitism, which actually seems like quite an old and sort of dead ideology. I think also even like it's kind of irrational even from a racist point of view. While you can sort of understand that demonising Muslims is an important part of Western imperialism, demonising Hispanic migrants is an important part of maintaining strong borders. You can sort of seem like what's the structural basis for the return of anti-Semitism. And obviously there's the state of Israel, which is meant to be a Jewish state, but is openly collaborating with some of these right-wing governments at the moment. So in order to fight anti-Semitism, we must first make clear the sort of disorienting picture by looking at the roots of anti-Jewish racism, picking apart the sort of dominant way it's talked about around the way that anti-Semitism is being accused and the way that it comes up in politics today. So just to let people know, I'm going to make three main arguments about how to understand its return, how to understand anti-Semitism. This talk is not a how-to guide about fighting it. It doesn't go too deep into the strategies about how to best take on the far right, anything like that. But I think political clarity has to be the starting point. So I want to argue three main things. The first is that we should be angered but not actually that surprised at the return of anti-Semitism. The second is that Zionism and the project of defending the state of Israel, far from protecting Jews, is actively detrimental to the fight against anti-Semitism and the system it's rooted in. Therefore, anyone who's interested in more than just playing games with accusations of anti-Semitism has to oppose that set of politics and the state of Israel. The third argument is that the smear of anti-Semitism has actually evolved beyond a simple defence of the state of Israel, but has become a key means through which the right is attacking the left internationally. Therefore, we must actually respond to this accusation directly and not by fudging our position on it, tactically conceding or trying to dodge the issue altogether. So it's my intention that these arguments will actually help orient the left and help build an anti-racist left that's actually much needed in the fight against anti-Semitism and the right today. Okay, so first argument on actual anti-Semitism and what it is. It was worth saying, like a few years ago, I noticed a trend in sort of snippets of the online sort of far-right sewage that sort of pops up from, the basement-dwelling neo-Nazis online. Along with their rank misogyny and sort of violent hatred of migrants and people of colour, there was explicit references to conspiracy theories about Jews controlling everything, about, celebrations of Hitler, of Nazi Germany and the Holocaust. This was presented as ironic, as jokey, and excused as merely dark humour that normal people just didn't get. But it became increasingly clear that these sort of freaks online on boards like 4chan were actually like, straight-up Nazis and unironically anti-Semitic. Back then, it seemed like a fringe issue and nowhere near as pressing as some of the other big racist attacks. So Islamophobia, the anti-terror laws, the incarceration of Indigenous Australians, and racism against migrants in Australia. I sort of suspect many others on the left as well dismissed these instances of anti-Semitism as appalling, but largely irrelevant. I think few predicted, even 5 years ago, how central anti-Semitism would be to the rise of authoritarian nationalist governments and the growth of the far right today. I think the Pittsburgh massacre in October last year was a shock. The murder of 11 Jews in the Tree of Life synagogue by a Trump supporter was a horrific wake-up call to many. Anti-Semitism is not some historical question, but is a deadly threat today. A news story of the shooter's last posts online was circulated, and this revealed to many the process that had been sort of underway for a number of years. The synagogue was part of HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, and before the attack, the shooter posted the following online. HIAS likes to bring invaders that kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics, I'm going in. So anti-Semitism is a key ideological pillar of modern fascist ideology. And the far right have grown massively in the last decade. But I want to argue that anti-Semitism isn't just the property of neo-Nazis. The conspiracy theory that Jews are secretly behind all that's wrong in the world has been mainstreamed to a degree. It's no longer just street thugs who blame Jews for everything. These ideas have actually taken up by many governments in power and establishment institutions. Now, I don't want to overstate this. It's not the key racism in the world, but I think there's been a pronounced return of anti-Semitism. So just a brief overview of that situation. In Hungary today, the fascist party Jobbik broke out of the margins in response to the global financial crisis that devastated the lives of most Hungarians. A key plank to their success was opposition to the liberal establishment and the sort of shady elite globalists who are weakening European borders and Hungary's and Hungary's sovereignty. One poll showed that 71% of Jobbik supporters thought that sooner or later Muslims will be the majority in Europe and that we have to and will force their religion and culture on us. Some 37% of all respondents gave credence to the idea that Jews were behind the Muslim invasion, while Jobbik supporters were more likely to believe in a Jewish conspiracy theory. Specific legislation has passed since by the far-right Fidesz Party government of Viktor Orban, banning the operations of Jewish billionaire George Soros and his sort of philanthropic projects there. There's been similar developments in Poland as well. Mass fascist demonstrations, explicitly making reference to the sort of Nazi regime, has been tacitly supported by the right-wing government there. In the United States, Trump's campaign against the Democrats are often punctuated by dog whistles to anti-Semitic elements of his base. From labelling Clinton as a vessel of all global special interests in 2016 to declaring all supporters of immigration as traitors and asserting that the migrant caravan was funded by George Soros in the midterms, Trump has a conscious project of mainstreaming anti-Semitic tropes. This has given confidence to fascists and neo-Nazis to mobilise the world over. So in America in 2017, hundreds of far-right activists marched through the liberal university town of Charlottesville, clutching tiki torches and chanting, "Jews will not replace us." In response to that demonstration, to the murder of Heather Haler, an anti-fascist activist, in the main demonstration in that town, the most powerful person in the world, Donald Trump, said that there were fine people on both sides. In January this year, Nazis organised a rally against Sudanese gangs on the shores of St Kilda in Melbourne. Hundreds of skinheads gathered to mark the 100th year anniversary of the founding of the German Workers' Party, the precursor of the Nazi Party. They brandished Nazi paraphernalia and were joined by a sitting senator, Fraser Anning, who obviously famously gave the final solution speech in Parliament last year. So from this, it should be clear that the far right are the biggest threat to all minority groups and the oppressed internationally, and that's true of Jews as well. So I think to explain this and the return of anti-Semitism, we need to sort of understand what it is. So historically, it wasn't just a personal obsession of Adolf Hitler or, you know, just something unique to the Nazi Party, which is often the way, like that was the way it was taught to me in high school. Racism against Jews actually played a central role in the ideology of Western Christian Europe. The exact historical reasons for this are fascinating, but kind of outside the scope of this talk. As modern capitalism developed and the masses became involved in politics, this shifted into a conscious tactic of the ruling classes to sort of divide and distract the majority of people. Mass politics was a new phenomenon, so they took this old prejudice of sectarian religious hatred and modified it to their own needs. The key thing is here that Jews were discriminated against and ghettoised. But as well as this, they held a particular place ideologically. So unlike other forms of racism, Jews are understood as superior, not as an inferior race. For the political right in the sort of pre-war period and increasingly today, racism against Jews held a special position in their worldview, not as subhuman, but as an all-powerful and alien force responsible for modernity and the undermining of the natural and organic white racial community. So this was a mainstream right position before the Second World War. Fascists actually take this a step further. There was actually a recent article in Red Flag that sort of put it better than I can, so I'll just quote that. Nations and race became the centre of a theory of history. Human existence is a struggle of nations, races and perhaps religions. Divisions within nations, such as white leftists who work in solidarity with non-white immigrants, have to be explained away. They have to be explained according to the logic of race and nation. Unpatriotic whites aren't just evil. If whites can be evil, the whole logic of racial nationalism breaks down. They have to be dupes. Fascist logic needs a great enemy, an anti-national nation, a race of people who undermine racial solidarity. In the fascist imagination, that is a role of Jews. And I think today, George Soros plays basically the same role as the sort of Judeo-Bolshevik myth did in the interwar period for the right. So Jews were at once behind big capital, the sort of finance sections of the bourgeoisie eroding people's lives, and also the Bolsheviks. They were the sort of threat from both sides. So George Soros is at once the billionaire globalist, responsible for eroding national sovereignty and living standards of the whites. And he's also the financier of liberal left of the liberal left, who's pushing a modernist agenda. This agenda is undermining the West's ability to withstand the influx of refugees and the erosion of traditional values by pro-migrant groups, feminists and LGBTI activists. So he's both he's like the enemy within, working in tandem with the existential threat from without. Okay, this sort of ideology was undermined after the Second World War for a few reasons. First, the impact of the Holocaust, obviously one of history's worst lapses into barbarism, made any form of explicit anti-Semitism unpalatable. Secondly, Judaism was recruited into Western ideology. So the Western powers now held up Judeo-Christian values in opposition to the sort of barbaric regimes in the Middle East and the illiberal communist dictatorships in Eastern Europe. I think this is how you can explain the acceptance of many survivors of the Holocaust and sort of Jewish refugees occurring at the same time at the heights of the anti-communist sort of purges of the 1950s. So that McCarthyist sort of witch hunting had strong anti-Jewish undertones, but it was during a time when European Jews were being integrated into the white population in America. I think that liberal world order is starting to crumble today. And the collapse of America as the unrivaled imperialist superpower and the crisis of mainstream politics and the global financial crisis is sort of expressions of that. In response, we're seeing a return of hard-right authoritarian nationalism. These political forces maybe not explicitly or self-consciously anti-Semitic, but their rhetoric around the migrant crisis, the role of the left internally, and globalism, I think, mirror a sort of fascist and anti-Semitic worldview. So I don't think we should obviously mourn the collapse of the liberal world order. It was not some bulwark against racism or dictatorships. You just look at what happened in Korea and Vietnam. But I think the old forms of reactionary politics and authoritarian methods of rule are coming back in response to it slowly crumbling. I think another important factor in understanding the return of anti-fascism as well is that denazification across Europe didn't actually properly happen. Fascist organisations and institutions that collaborated with Nazi Germany were never fully dismantled. So I don't really have a lot of time to sort of go into that, but there was a conscious process of fascists, like even a few decades ago, to sort of detoxify, as they called it in France. So they made a conscious shift away from anti-Semitism. So people probably know about Marine Le Pen expelling her father, who set up the National Front, and who was a supporter of the Vichy sort of fascist collaborating regime in France. Was an open anti-Semite called the Holocaust, A Detail of History. There was a conscious strategy of downplaying anti-Semitism. That's less true today. If you look at the National Front all across Europe, they're more explicitly anti-Semitic in their rhetoric, and they're also engaged in what's sort of called the memory wars, so trying to rehabilitate the old fascist collaborating regimes all across Europe today, saying that, you can't, they weren't that bad, the people that collaborated with Hitler, they had some good policies, that kind of thing. This is an open strategy of the modern far right. Okay, some argue that this could signal that the apparent acceptance of Jews in the post-world order may turn out to just be a historical an anomaly. I think that goes too far. I don't think anti-Semitism is going to become the main racism. I don't think the capitalist class in the West are just going to take it up. Jews aren't ghettoized in the same way. The idea that there's going to be some sort of state-sanctioned pogrom anytime soon is very unlikely. But I think there's a definite return of it. I think while anti-Semitism isn't structural in the same way that Islamophobia or, say, anti-Chinese racism here in Australia is, its persistence and reoccurring presence can only be explained by linking it to the institutions and ideologies that are creations of capitalism and that are called on to maintain it. Anti-Semitism is more than just a set of bad ideas able to be taken up by the left or right, that kind of thing. I think from this it's clear that the starting point to challenging anti-Semitism has to be opposing the far right and the mainstream right that has enabled its growth. So that kind of leads onto my second argument. It should be clear from that anti-Semitism comes from the political right and the system the system that they defend. But a glance at any newspaper or cursory search online will tell you that the opposite. So according to countless argues in both the articles, in both the Murdoch press and the liberal press, it's the left who are responsible for anti-Semitism. So it's Jeremy Corbyn who has made the British Labour Party a hideout for anti-Semites and Britain an unsafe place for Jews. It's Congresswomen Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib who have been using their platform in the US Congress as to spread racial hatred. It's socialist clubs and university campuses who are using the excuse of free speech to attack religious minorities. This is obviously, I think, paints a topsy-turvy sort of picture of how the world actually works. The underlying premise of all this is that the far left support is the far left support of Palestine and its opposition to Israel. So this is just the main way that Judaism is understood these days, that there's a conflation between Judaism and Zionism and the state of Israel. So it's worth looking at that for a second. Israel was founded in the wake of the Nazis' mass murder of Jews during the Second World War. It promised a safe haven to all Jewish people. This obviously resonates with a much broader layer of people than those who support the actions of Israel's current government again, and their sort of policies towards Palestinians. I think it's worth correcting this sort of nationalist myth-making. Israel was a product of a confluence of interests at a historical juncture. It was the creation of British imperialism in order to have a stable, loyal regime in one of the most geopolitically important regions in the world. The people who founded Israel, like people who support it today, believed in Zionism, which is like the political philosophy of Israel. The idea that Jewish people should have a state of their own in Palestine, and that this state, they should be the majority, because it's impossible for Jews and non-Jews to live together in harmony. So Zionism emerged as a response to anti-Semitic repression in Eastern Europe towards the end of the 19th century, but it actually accepts and promotes the fundamental premise of anti-Semitism. Until World War II, Zionism was a minority current among Eastern European Jews most affected by anti-Semitism. Many more were socialists who actually wanted to stay in Europe and fight anti-Semitism as part of the struggle against their governments. The problem that confronted Zionism was obviously that there were people who lived in Palestine. So this necessarily made it into a racist ideology that insisted that Palestinians weren't entitled to the land they lived on. So since the violent expulsion of Palestinians in what's remembered as the Nakba, or the catastrophe in 1948, Israel has been a white colonial settler state that has supported the interests of Western imperialism in the region and has sort of expanded into the Palestinian territories. The charge of anti-Semitism has been laid against all critics of these murderous policies and supporters of Palestine ever since. There's a few obvious, I shouldn't be too hard to explain to this room, but there's a few basic facts that sort of explode this idea. Firstly, Israel doesn't actually represent and protect the interests of all Jews. There are many Jews around the world who reject the project of Israel as a racist endeavour, but who are dismissed as unrepresentative or self-hating Jews. Most recently, there was an open letter signed by hundreds of prominent Jews opposing the conflation of Israel with Judaism and condemning the racist government in Israel. This letter was attacked, denounced, it wasn't published in a whole bunch of papers as well after criticisms were made. Second, the Zionist identification of all Jews with Israel actually makes Jews a target for some who accept this rhetoric and are outraged by the murderous actions of the state of Israel. This is the cordiology of Zionism makes Jews around the world actually less safe. Third, I think far from opposing the current resurgence of anti-Semitism, the current government in Israel is actually a keen supporter of far-right governments. So, people might know the first phone call that Viktor Orban received as a congratulation from another world leader was Netanyahu. It's also well known that Trump and Netanyahu get on very well, never mind Trump's sort of open nods to the far-right. Finally, many fascists support Israel. So for some, this is an easy way for them to solve the Jewish question in their own country. For others, Israel is actually held up as a model of a sort of white, racialized ethno-state they seek to establish themselves. But because I think, there's some pretty clear reasons why the two shouldn't be conflated. But because the historical memory of the Holocaust and most people's rightful opposition to anti-Semitism, it's the primary way of defending the state's existence and shooting down any criticism. How this ideology is used in different contexts is shaped by the sort of broader political situation. So while in the post-war period, when there were all kinds of sort of anti-colonial and third world struggles, Israel was seen as like a national liberation project in a way itself. It had a sort of socialist flavour to it as well. During the 90s, during the Gulf Wars, it was more about saying that Israel was the only democracy in the Middle East, that because of its sort of intrinsic Judeo-Christian values, it should be defended on the grounds, and against all the sort of reactionary Islamic regimes in the region. Today, I think it's like the ideology is much more that it's a safe space for Jews and that has the right to defend itself and should arm itself to the teeth. This is, I think, increasingly becoming the last resort because it's actually becoming harder to defend Israel on the basis that it's the only democracy in the Middle East, given the government there has become actually more openly authoritarian and right-wing. People probably know as well about the nation-state law that was passed more recently. I think also they cynically use the fact that the far right's back to bolster the argument that we have to defend Israel as a safe place for Jews. Okay, well, on the attack of on the way that the charge of anti-Semitism is used to attack Palestinian supporters, I want to go into one example, and that is from the international. Well, that's the IHRA's definition. So, the International Holocaust Remembrance Association. They are a group that, well, like the title suggests, have a whole bunch to do with remembering the Holocaust. They published a definition of anti-Semitism in 2016, which has been a flashpoint for a number of controversies around the world. Zionist activists have sought to move a motion adopting the definition in governments, organisations, student unions, trade unions and campaign groups. While the definition of anti-Semitism that they've published is kind of fine, it's the attached examples that are the problem. So they include, one, denying the Jewish people their right to self-determination, for example, by claiming that the existence of a state of Israel is a racist endeavour. Two, by applying double standards requiring of Israel a behaviour not expected or demanded of any other democratic nation. And three, by drawing comparisons to contemporary Israeli policy to that of the Nazis. So actually none of this is anti-Semitic and would be a huge capitulation to Zionism if adopted by anti-racist institutions. This is actually designed to put us in a bind. If we passed it, we're admitting that opposition to Israel should be kept within the limits outlined. And if we vote against it, it looks like we're just rejecting a straight-up definition of anti-Semitism and a motion opposing anti-Semitism. This was actually made pretty clear. Like, people probably have a lot of examples of this. I'll go into one in a minute. But this became quite clear a few weeks ago at Wollongong University at the student union there. The left holds that union. They adopted this definition, but with the attached examples removed. This was immediately attacked by the Zionist press as anti-Semitic. Okay, so I think, yeah, the conflation of Judaism and Zionism is pretty widespread. This year, the German Bundestag passed a resolution designating the boycott, divestment and sanctions movement anti-Semitic. The US House of Representatives followed suit in July. A little closer to home, it was the official grounds of the deregistration of the Socialist Alternative Club at Monash, my old club at my old campus. Okay, there's obviously a lot more to say on Palestinian solidarity in Israel or when it comes to the question of anti-Semitism, but in the interest of time, I've got to move on. Okay, this leads to my third argument, though, that the accusation of anti-Semitism has actually morphed into something more than just a defence of Israel. So the smear has grown, yeah, into something more than just a way to discipline the left narrowly around the question of Palestinian solidarity. It's become a major way that the right opportunistically attacks and undermines the left in general. So I think you actually can't explain all the charges of anti-Semitism against, like, Jeremy Corbyn or the progressive senators in the United States by only looking at the complainant's ideological commitment to Western imperialism. You know, holding just the Israeli lobby responsible for all of this, I think, sort of stretches to comical proportions its power and, you know, in some ways actually echoes some sort of anti-Semitic tropes if that's your only starting point. So how do you sort of explain this? Well, I think over the last few years, thanks to the defensiveness of the left on the question of Palestine and the rise of actual anti-Semitism, the smear has been taken up by the right, by liberals as well, and by the centre-left social democrats as a way of wedging and browbeating the anti-racist left. So a key example of this has been the controversy surrounding Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of the British Labour Party. That was sort of best manifest most recently with the expulsion of left-wing MP Chris Williamson. So the British Labour Party has been plagued by internal crises over the handling of accusations of anti-Semitism. According to the official narrative, Corbyn is either an anti-Semite himself, or at least his leadership has opened the floodgates for anti-Semites to join the party, emboldening them to attack Jewish members. So this sort of sorry situation has developed off the back of a groundswell in support of Labour since Corbyn's left-wing campaign to lead the party in 2015. I think it clearly shows the opportunism of the Labour right and their determination to either force Corbyn to capitulate by any means necessary or to make sure the party is not electable. I think it's worth focusing on because it also exemplifies in pretty stark terms the weakness of the sort of left reformist challengers like Corbyn. The Labour left has hesitated, it's capitulated, and it's shown an inability to stand up firmly to these accusations. This is not because Corbyn's confused on this question or accepts the narrative. Corbyn's been a long-term supporter of Palestinian self-determination. He's across these politics. He's not confused. I think it's because his overall strategy in relating to forces to his right is to compromise. So this same, it's worth saying as well, this same method of compromising is not applied to the sort of weaker forces to his left who don't fall in behind him. But by trying to sort of tactically concede grounds to them, it's only legitimised the right's attacks and weaken the left's position. Corbyn refuses to drive out the right in his party and force a split, so he's left with no other choice. A sort of turning point was when the Labour Party adopted the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism in 2017. And this whole sort of affair is a masterclass in trepidation and capitulation. So after campaigns targeting specific members of the Labour Party and their support for Palestine, including Ken Livingstone, the National Executive Committee met in September last year to pass the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism in full, including all the examples. Now, this was stitched up by the trade unions and as well as by Momentum. So Momentum was once the sort of grassroots pro-Corbyn campaign group. It's now controlled by a sort of egomaniac and Zionist John Landsman. This definition, the votes for it were basically stitched up before the meeting. It made any amendment with subtractions or qualifiers unlikely to pass. Corbyn obviously knows that this definition is bogus and simply a tool to sort of wedge the anti-racist left. Instead of confronting the right in his party head-on, he compromised and wavered. So he personally moved in this meeting an amendment, including a statement, adding that characterisations of the creation of the state of Israel as racist was fine and not anti-Semitic. This was rejected by the power brokers in the meeting, the committee, like, quite obviously. But instead of actually fighting it, Corbyn withdrew the amendment and helped the Labour Party adopt the definition. So rather than standing up for Palestinians, rather than actually carving out a clear position to fight from, he caved in and accepted that legitimate criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic. To quote an anonymous source in the meeting, the right were loving it. It seemed to me that Deputy Leader Tom Watson was just sitting back and enjoying the retreat by the left. And obviously, surprise, surprise, this has done nothing to appease the right in the party. They're not going to stop until they feel like they have control of their party again. The capitulation was sort of blood in the water. The smears of anti-Semitism have been used countless times since to discredit Corbyn and to plunge Labour into internal turmoil rather than take advantage of the crisis in the Tories right now. It's created this sort of insane situation where the British Labour Party is the key institution of racism in British politics, according to the media, when Boris Bloody Johnson is the Prime Minister of Britain. Institutional racism was cited by a number of right-wing Labour MPs when they quit the party. It's been the subject of a BBC documentary, and it's been at the centre of the sort of scandalous expulsion of Chris Williamson for opposing the party's attitude to their appeasement of these attacks. So Chris Williamson was filmed, recorded, saying in a meeting that the Labour Party's been too apologetic of anti-Semitism. This was apparently anti-Semitic to say. He got expelled instantly. He contested that. He got readmitted for a while, and then he got expelled again, which I think just sort of sums up everything that's wrong with this strategy. So this isn't the sort of primary cause in the fall of support for Corbyn, but it's undoubtedly a contributing factor. And I think it's a reflection of a strategy that's been pretty disastrous for the left. There's been other ways that false charges of anti-Semitism have helped the right in issues beyond just that of defending Israel. I can't really go into them all. It's worth saying, though, that it's been a key weapon in overturning basic principles of free speech on campuses around this country and around the world. So on this campus, Jake Lynch, academic, lost his tenure, was sacked because of his support for Palestine. In the United States, Britain and Australia, academics have been fired. Students have been penalised for promoting BDS. I think the most sort of absurd variation has been the attack on all socialists for being anti-Semitic because they oppose capitalism. This is actually like the kind of slippery slope where it gets you. So the editor of the Jewish Chronicle, Stephen Pollard, shared a video of Jeremy Corbyn just attacking the banking sector and the role of financial capital's control over British politics, saying that was anti-Semitic. His tweet read, been hesitating to tweet this because I keep thinking it can't be, surely it can't be. But the more I think about it, the more it seems it really is. This is, nudge, nudge, you know who I'm talking about, don't you? And yes, I do. It's appalling. So that's the kind of situation that we get to today. I think both the defenders of Israel and those using this accusation as a way to wedge the left bear a huge responsibility. They're playing games with anti-Semitism at a time when a real anti-Semitic threat is on the rise. They're undermining attempts to build a broad, confident and militant anti-racist coalition, which is the most important task confronting fascism today. Okay, well, to sum up, in order to fight anti-Semitism, a clear understanding of how it works and where it comes from is not just preferable, but necessary. The greatest threat to Jews is the far right. Fascists are oppositional to the current system, but take from it their political starting points and see in it an inspiration for their fantasies. The State of Israel is a racist endeavour that has nothing to do with opposing anti-Semitism. Zionism and false accusations of anti-Semitism play a destructive role in the fight against the real anti-Jewish threat today. The task of the left, I think, is to build an anti-racist movement capable of tackling these falsehoods headfirst, analysing and explaining the real roots of anti-Semitism, mobilising people into action against reactionary politics, and linking the struggle against racism to a challenge to this racist system as a whole.